the platform. Step up and speak out.
It is ZFF Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwirirai. It is the 26th of November, 2018, and it is the platform. 27 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock is the time. I'm with you until 8:30. And just to remind you of some of the frequencies you can listen to us on: Chivu 99.8, Kama TV Wange 105.1, Mutara Shanga 97.6, Gweru 104.3, Nyanga 98.2, Kadoma 105.2, Bulawayo, my hometown, 106.7. We're broadcasting out of Harare, where our frequency is 106.4. Listen to us over the internet. It's www.zfmstereo.co.zw. And you can download the TuneIn app, which is available for free, and just look for ZFM Stereo, and you can listen to us live and in charge. The conversation is live. Get in touch with us on WhatsApp on 0731-168-045. And also, you can get in touch with us via Twitter at ZFM Stereo, on Instagram at ZFM Stereo ZW, and on Facebook, facebook.com/ZFM Stereo. And of course, this program is available as a podcast within 24 hours of live broadcast. You can go and listen to us online on Apple Podcasts. So yesterday, in fact, let me not prevaricate over this. 16 days of activism against gender-based violence is an international campaign to challenge violence against women and girls. The campaign runs every year from 25 November to the International Day for Elimination of Violence Against Women to 10 December, the Human Rights Day. The theme for 2018 campaign, which is this year, is End Gender-Based Violence in the World of Work. This year's theme builds on the momentum and achievements during the 2017 campaign, when 700 organizations in 92 countries campaigned around the theme of Together We Can End GBV in Education. The goal for 2018 is to continue to target the institutions in which gender-based violence is perpetuated and push for systemic change and accountability. Today I've got a panel, of course, as I always say, people who are smarter in as far as subjects that I get people to come and discuss with me on. And I'm going to start off with introducing the CEO for the Zimbabwe Gender Commission, Virginia Mwanigwa. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Also here with us, I've got Naka Ningomasha, who is with Men Engage. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I've got Population Services Country Director, Mr. Abebe Shibra. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
And also with us, I've got Munyara Zinengu, who is Padare Men's Forum. Thank you for coming through.
Thank you.
It is a different type of discussion for me, because when I talk about gender-based violence, normally the panel's predominantly women. And one of the things that we're having a discussion with somebody is to say how men do not take part in the conversation when it comes to gender-based violence, because they think this is akazi, and is it for the next 16 days and now 15 days it's going to be women just talking and having talk shops. But there is an integral, a very important role that men have to play in as far as this conversation is concerned. And what I'm going to start off with, starting, of course, with the Zimbabwe Gender Commission, with you, Virginia, is what is the status of gender-based violence within Zimbabwe at the moment?
Thank you very much. The status of gender-based violence is that while we have seen some improvement in terms of particularly awareness around gender-based violence in all its forms, we still see that there is an unacceptably high level of gender-based violence, ranging from whether it's physical abuse, whether it's sexual. We do get a lot of rape cases, including of children. Whether it's psychological, it's not always said, but we actually get, in terms of our research, some things that happen in our culture that actually affect those that are targeted psychologically. Like when you get a feeling that you're not supposed to be in a space where you're supposed to be in politics and decision making in other areas. And then finally, we also get a lot of economic abuse, which unfortunately a lot of our people believe is part of our culture, that when we talk about resources, we talk about economic benefits, these are to be given to the custodianship of men. I'll stop there for now.
Okay. You did mention in passing that about progress. The progress you say is mainly in awareness and not much else.
It's in awareness, but it's also in our legislative framework, where we do have an Anti-Domestic Violence Act that was adopted in 2007. And even our constitution also outlaws in Section 52, or at least guarantees the right to personal security and bodily integrity. And we find that we also have some laws, like one of the GBV instances is one of child marriages. And we've had our constitutional court outlawing the issue of child marriages. So we do have some laws that are there. The challenge is that we need to ensure that these make, or these have a meaning in the lives of our people.
So when we talk about meaning, is this about enforcement, or sometimes people just don't know their rights?
There is a bit of some people not knowing their rights, because when you talk about social transformation, even if you've reached out to a lot of people, you know that you've not covered the whole country. And even when you've covered it, there are some people that still may not know certain areas around GBV. But the issue of enforcement is our main challenge, where we need to be able to get the institutions that are tasked with delivering the justice, or ensuring that we prevent gender-based violence, really taking their role.
0731 168 045. My question for you is, how do you think that we can have less, or in fact improve the fight against gender-based violence, and particularly in this instance today in the workplace? We're going to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to hear from the rest of the panel here. What is your view in as far as the status of gender-based violence in Zimbabwe? We'll start with you over here from Men Engage.
Okay, thank you so much. Like what Virginia said, in terms of awareness, this has also made an increase in terms of reports, but we still have a culture of silence, where sometimes people don't feel they need to report, or maybe the person is a close relative, and because of the social contract and because of the relations, that you don't want to sour by being the one who is reporting Baba Mnini or Uncle Josh, who have been so kind to us or to the family, then people tend not to report. But that does not mean that violence has not taken place. So you realize that in terms of the law, I think we are doing pretty well, like what Virginia has just said, we are doing pretty well. I think our greatest enemy is in the implementation. I think that's where we see. You're asking about enforcement, and there are some barriers around it, like that of relations. And you realize a lot of GBV, especially which is happening to women, is being perpetrated by close relatives who, sadly, most of them are men, you know. So, which is not a good picture. And we tend, in this patriarchal environment that we live in, we tend to cover some of it. We tend not to want to talk about it. We tend to be conservative around it.
I sort of want to go a little bit differently. I think the problem is, don't we just talk too much? Isn't that the bigger issue? That we just wait until the 16 days are up, and we come up with hashtags, and we attend meetings and so forth. But on the ground, on the actual ground, you find some people who say they're champions of gender-based violence, right? Say the most terrible things to women, say on social media and things like that. And, you know, in itself, that is a form of gender-based violence, isn't it?
For some of us, it's stopped way, way back to be work. It's how we live, you know. It's not that we don't wait for 16 days to say, yes, what's the good or the in-thing hashtag that we're going to go with. But this has been, it is part of our life. We talk about GBV nearly every day of our life. Even in January, we'll be talking about GBV and saying it's bad. There's no time that then we'll then turn and say, oh, I'll repent in November so that I can be a cool guy. And when 10th of November, December is there, then I cease, I become something else. It has become part of the journey that we walk every day in terms of bringing awareness, and in some instance, in terms of also making sure that people report, And we have created, you know, people liking and people not liking us because of such talk. But I think it's the proper way, and that's the only way to go. You know, we can't then say at one hand violence is good, at another hand it's bad. But it's bad throughout the year. And we hope that we have many men on board and also women on board to begin to talk like this and consistently for 365 days to bombard the studios, the radios, the newspapers, all the print and the electronic with positive messages that can encourage people to talk about it and to challenge GBV whenever they find it.
Abebe, you're part of a campaign that is interesting. It's called Because I'm a Man. Before I ask you further about, can you tell us about that campaign?
Yeah, I think thank you very much for this opportunity. I think this campaign is as mentioned by my friend. Well, it is for 16 days activism, 16 days activism. But it doesn't mean that, you know, we are, you know, just only talking and, you know, doing something about, you know, the, to stop gender-based violence. For me, these 16 days is just to bring, you know, all actors together at community level, at policy level, you know, to consolidate efforts and just to bring, you know, some kind of strategy that would, you know, that would help, you know, the community, you know, to understand, you know, the implication, the impact on the gender-based violence. So from that point of view, the main purpose of this, you know, I am a man, that means as a man, we are, you know, responsible. Because, you know, there are so many champions, you know, in the community. Most of the violence is just, you know, exert or practiced by men. But that doesn't mean that men are, you know, far from, you know, they are not abused. That doesn't mean. But the most prevalent one is, you know, just the women's rights violence. So those violence just, you know, happen by mostly, most of the time, by men. So men are, you know, the main responsible member of the community to address the gender-based violence to the extent of, you know, just eliminating that violence which is happening at community level, starting from household level. So that is the main purpose of, you know, this campaign. Otherwise, it doesn't mean that, you know, we are only campaigning for 60 days. We have to, and we should be campaigning, you know, and just doing, not only campaigning, doing the practice and, you know, implementing what we know into practice. Sometimes, you know, for example, in the context of Zimbabwe, when we see the one out of, you know, three women are experiencing, you know, gender-based violence, one in three, which is a huge number, and then among just one out of four, they are, you know, experiencing, you know, sexual violence. So in one another way, the violence is in one another form is very high, which undermining the rights, the autonomy, and the dignity of, you know, women. So if we want to see a nation to develop, we have to invest in women. And we have to get rid of, you know, just any form of violence that undermines the rights and the well-being of women. So that's why men can be a champion in addressing, you know, the, what you call it, you know, the gender-based violence which is existing, you know, in any countries. Because violence has no boundary, no economic boundary, no social boundary. It's happening everywhere. So men can play a role to address this program and this issue at a larger scale. That's why the importance of men engagement is very, very critical, very important.
And why did you feel, I know you talked just about it a little bit, from a personal perspective, why did you feel you had to take part?
Well, just I personally took this gender-based violence as one of my role. And I want to be a model because I'm a member of family. I have two daughters and one son. And I would like to, you know, play, you know, a kind of role modeling, because sometimes, you know, people behaving, I mean, people are imitating or just, you know, copying what you are doing. So from that point of view, as a responsible man, as a responsible husband, as a responsible, you know, member of the community, I have to practice the gender-based violence elimination. So my personal thing is just, I have to be a model. I have to practice. I have to behave, because as a professional and as a member of, you know, this what you call health. I'm a country director for Population Reserve Zimbabwe, and you know, people are, you know, just behaving or acting what I'm trying to do. So the reason why I'm taking this part is I want to be a champion. I want to be a model, so that will be replicated at all levels, starting from my office, starting from my home, actually.
Okay, Mnyala is coming to you. Just close it, get closer. Your organization has worked for long in as far as working with men and issues of sensitivities around how they behave in society and women. How have you seen the change in the behavior of men when it comes to issues of GBV over the years in Zimbabwe?
Thank you so much. Yes, like we've said, it has been a journey. It's been a lot of activities, a lot of experiences. But our lessons also from the engagement with men has always been, yes, we can talk about it, but also need to live it. So what we've been observing over the years is that men are also human beings, primarily before they're even called fathers or bosses at work or everywhere. So by appealing to this inner man, we're also getting the reflections from men around what it means really to be a human being first before I become a man, such that being violent then doesn't need to define who the kind of a man I am as a father, as a husband, or as another man who works anywhere place or doesn't even work. So over the years, Espadare, we've also learned to interface with men from different spheres and from the different facets of life, as professionals, as the community men, as the traditional leadership, even as the faith leaders at different levels, really. And the lesson has always been, we need this information. We need to be conscientized. We need to be engaged. We need to be supported. We need to walk this journey together towards transformation. We need to be real men. We need to debunk these kind of notions around what it means to be a man, as defined by society, as also defined by religion even, such that this kind of a new man who will be trying to redefine can also then be reflected in a way that you can also view women as human beings. You can also view women as deserving of the same human rights that they also do have as men. And this has always been the kind of interface that we'll be having with men. Of course, we can't then rule out the challenges around mobilizing men. It has not been very easy, really, because, you know, whenever men are invited to a certain platform, they also want to consider what is in it for me, over and above the social change that is also necessarily important to the men. But they also want to see the economic benefit of these engagement processes, which as part of it, we are not offering at the moment, but offering the social change dividend, really, in terms of our engagement with men. A transformed man, a gender-sensitive man, an engaging father is actually a jewel that might lead in terms of building the family, building institutions, and even as we have this man in the workplace, I think we can then try to celebrate this kind of a man, this kind of a mentality, and this kind of attribute that would be shared.
You're listening to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, we talked a lot about the status, what's been happening, what's going on. Well, I don't want to go delve into some of the intricate details. There's some worrying statistics I want to share with you after the break in as far as gender-based violence. And also, there was a mention about reporting. Do you think reporting where you come from, is it as high as it should be? Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
Still tuned into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. The name is Larry Kwedirai. It is The Platform. And we are talking about 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, which is an international campaign to challenge violence against women and girls. And this year's theme, which of course this runs until the 10th of December, the theme for this year is End Gender-Based Violence in the World of Work. And in the studio, I'm going to start referencing them as we have the discussion. And one of the things, stats show that almost 7 in 10 men in Zim, or 7 in 10 Zim women experience some form of violence at least once in their lifetime. 46% of Zim men admit to having perpetrated some form of violence in their lifetime. Most incidences are going unreported. This is startling figures. The question I ask is, and coming to you, Virginia, first of all, Virginia Mwadegwa, CEO of Zimbabwe Gender Commission, is, why are women not reporting, or if they're reporting, with withdrawing cases that they would have already reported?
We have to understand that gender-based violence thrives within a context. And the context that we've got is a context in which the cultural values and norms that are taught to young people make it such that it is not, I think Nakai mentioned the issue of, it's then looked at as if you are embarrassing the family if you report some of the things that are happening within a family. So you find that a lot of the women may choose that instead of raising that issue, let me just quiet and be quiet and deal with it. But also importantly, we need to also understand that once women have reported, they need to also see that something is done. Because if nothing is done, then they will believe that a lot of the stigma that comes with having reported what's going on in your, in your family, in your domestic sphere, has been for nothing. So what that also does is, not only this woman is going to not report next time, but it also becomes a lesson for other women that are aware of what has happened, that they're not then going to report. And we then find that there's always a loophole, where I did mention that we have a good legislative framework, but one of the things I need to make very clear is that society somehow, in our cultural values or cultural traditions, always find a loophole. I talked about the Constitutional Court outlawing child marriages, and the Constitution is very clear that anybody under 18 is a child and should be treated as a child. And then when you go to our laws, the criminal codification law, you find that it looks at somebody who's able to consent to sex or to sexualize on as somebody who's above 16. So that already, that discrepancy results in a problem where we might not see marriages happening, but we definitely will find that some people will now have sex with children. As long as they don't marry them, it's seen as if it is okay. So it's the cultural perspective that we need to deal with, and where we need to revisit our cultures, our cultural values, and say what is working and what is not working for us.
There is I think my listeners will know about this. I remember a couple of weeks ago we had this topic, and someone wrote into us, and do get in touch with us on 0731-168045. I'll be reading your message just now. WizTech said, I've just seen it, on 0731-168045. And they say, this guy said, you know what, I was violent towards my wife, and I asked her to go and report me to the police, and she wouldn't. And I went and tried to hand myself into the police, or something to that effect. But that was sort of the circumstances. I can't remember the exact situation, but that was the case. And even the people in here wouldn't believe that somebody would go and do that themselves. There was also the aspect of sometimes the question of possibly losing the sometimes the sole breadwinner in the house, that becomes a factor, that if I report this person, they end up going to jail. They're the only ones who are the breadwinner in the family. How big a factor is that?
It is a factor, because again, we've been made to believe, or women have been made to believe, that the provider is the man. So much so that you find, even before she's also thinking about the stigma attached to being in that kind of relationship, she's also thinking that I cannot be seen to be the one sending this man to jail. So that also starts to then discourage her from reporting. Remember, this is the same person who from childhood was told that this is marriage, and with violence in a marriage, it is what is to be expected, and you deal with it, and you find a way of ensuring that you don't do anything that will result in you being violated. When the violation is happening for no reason, she will still take it because she expects that this is the norm. So we are starting to say, as the Gender Commission, as other players, we need to be able to educate our people that they understand that they have rights, and there are certain things that are criminal in nature and should therefore be reported, so that you don't have a situation where you think this is family, it's our domestic issue, not to be taken to the police.
It's a bit creepy because it reminds me of some of these shows I've been watching about cults, in which everything, say, we resolve it within our own system and nothing's reported. But that's a story for another day.
We've had people trying to resolve the rape of minors or rape, because then people enter into a discussion around this child can then be married and it's okay. But it's not okay, because now you're marrying off a child to a rapist. But we need to break that cycle where we say this is our culture and we excuse, because for a lot of the people that will use culture, I do believe that they use that as an excuse for bad behavior, and we need to be able to call them out.
0731-168045. WizTech Z says, it's sad to know that it's only women who think they are always vulnerable, yet everyone is vulnerable. So sad we are neglecting the boy child every time. Sometimes it takes away the essence of the whole gender-based violence concept. Is that a valid concern? We'll start with you and then come to you.
It's a valid concern to the extent that when we say we are saying no to gender-based violence, we are not saying only violence against women. We are saying there should be no gender-based violence against men, against children. So at the end of the day, people will go with what the statistics say. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about having a multi-sectoral approach is that others will then target. So you'll find that a lot of the focus has been on the women. But in terms of the children, I'm yet to see any campaign that has said it's okay to violate children. So we need to be able to recognize that, yes, there is that concern that maybe we need to protect all our children. Because if we are a society that condones violence, unfortunately, that violence will know no bounds.
And on top of that, there is also the concern. We talk about the child marriages and so forth. And while the Constitutional Court came with a ruling and said and outlaw them, more often than not, you hear that they, in most instances, cases are not prosecutable because the police did not know under what codification, under what law, and how do you actually charge the person. So how much of a drawback is that while the legislation and the victories have been made, they haven't gone past the line that is necessary for us to achieve the objectives?
I think a lot of work needs to be done. The very fact that there was a ruling, it's great, it's success.
Hmm.
But I think we need to internalize it and also make sure that there is a law which is there now that can be followed. And it's very clear that if someone does this, this will happen to them. And make sure that also communities are custodians. The greatest challenge we have is that we have communities that look at marriage as an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we look at marriage as an achievement, when people have a girl child, they start respecting that girl child, not because she's just a girl child, but mkazwemun. And they're preparing that girl child for marriage. Even the talk, some will even not even call their daughters with their names. And you know, at one time I was talking to a guy, you know, and because the guy used to go and pick the daughter during the school run, and you'd always talk like, So when you start talking like that, you are inculcating the notion that women are given for marriage. So
they're a product for purchase.
So they're product to be purchased. So when that happens, when they are 16 or 15,
mm-hmm.
people still hang on to their expectation and then deliver their daughters to their abusers. I will not, in this time, I will not even talk about it as a marriage. For me, purely is girl abuse.
No, I think
I will just say girl abuse. I will not even say a marriage. It's not a marriage.
Mm.
You can't marry anyone who is under 18. That's a child. But you find that when that happens, there's a lot of factors. Someone is saying, "Ndudakurorerwa, vakwashangawa uye," and mostly, Nailari, if I was going to ask you, "Ndiana kambo pfuma nerora?" You know, if we're looking at it, no one will even get out of their poverty because of Rora. But there is something that we really, really need to interrogate in our minds and say, what's wrong with us? Where are we losing it? I think it's high time we begin to challenge these things. We begin to talk about it, expose it, and make sure that whoever is going there, Kanaari Virginia, who is going there, Satete, you know, she is actually also helping for a crime to be committed, so she is also liable. So ngatiti nakaya rora mwanane 14 years must be arrested, but Virginia is an accomplice. Let Virginia be an accomplice, and let the next person, the Munyai, be an accomplice, and the next person be an accomplice. So if we go and arrest all the 10 as an example that we are not tolerating violence.
But as I said, ultimately, end of the day, the key thing is going to be down to having the legislation in place.
Exactly.
That says, this is the codification, this is what the person's arrested for. Otherwise, then, you know,
but But Larry, the only challenge is having the legislation also does not automatically translate to
its people. What I wanted to ask him, and the issue then comes of there's corrupt activities around a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And also the corrupt activities sometimes might not include money. It just means these gurus, I just look the other way. Even some instances is related to the sabuko, so I can't really actually do anything because of, you know, whatever class structures implied or even real that may exist. So maybe it can come to you, maybe how would you deal with such a situation?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to clarify when we are talking about gender-based violence. Gender doesn't mean a woman. Mm-hmm. And gender means, you know, it's a socially constructed terminology given by the society in relation to role and responsibility. Gender is not a substitute, it's a substitute word of sex. So from that point of view, sometimes when we're talking about gender-based violence, not necessarily meaning a woman. Mm-hmm. Just gender, violence is just, it's everywhere. So in general, the violence, you know, when you define the violence, it is any form of harmful act that result in physical, sexual and psychological harm or suffering of a woman, a man, girl or boy on the basis of their gender. So from that point of view, when we're talking gender, gender-based violence, we shouldn't necessarily associate with women. Of course, women are the most significant portion which are affected by
boys, most privileged.
Yes, even boys are you know they are also vulnerable. So when it comes to your question, particularly, I think if I understood you well, the issues are there, but it's not well reported. That's something that you are.
It's almost, how do I put it? It's almost like a lot of things in Zimbabwe, we start something.
Yeah.
And then, the part that is most critical, where somebody just needs to sign something or that just doesn't get done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're like, oh, we started, so
absolutely.
We're happy.
No, you know, just I can take these things from two angles. I think before dealing with that stuff, you know, as I mentioned earlier, or just as we have discussed, you know, having, you know, policies, you know, legislation mean nothing unless these policies and legislation practical situations. But when it comes to the actual situation at the ground, you know, two things, policy level and, you know, at community level, just leave about the policy, but deliver the legislation. But the most important thing is how can you, you know, deal with, you know, the norms and, you know, the practice and which exists in the community. For example, one study which is conducted by UNFP, it says that, you know, 70% of people in the community, they know early marriage and domestic violence are, you know, the main violence which existing in Zimbabwe context.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the most important thing is, you know, 84% of they know the importance of reporting if someone is violated, for example, rape, for example. They know the importance of reporting to the health facility. They know the importance, because immediately after rape, for example, there is an unintended pregnancy, might be exposed for sexual transmitted disease, including HIV/AIDS. But again, 83%, they know before I go to the health station, I have to report to the police. You see what I mean? So most of that, because of that, women are not, those raped or those victims, they are not reporting to the health facility. So this is unnoticeable at community level. But when it comes to the legislation, the policy, yes, you are right. There's no problem when it comes to policy and legislations. But the most important for me is accountability issue. The account is the most important thing. If there is a policy, that policy has to be implemented. And who is responsible in terms of, you know, implementing the individual or in institutions? So there should be an accountable. Might be, I have a feeling that the accountability element is missing in translating policies, legislations into practices.
Okay.
This is the most important thing.
So I want to ask this from Amanya from Padare. One of the things that we never really talk about is how sometimes we skip the part where we can work with, you know, young boys and girls for them to understand these issues. How critical is it now at this point to start with those? And what sort of role can society play in making sure that children grow up to become adults, for example, that respects either gender more?
Okay. Thank you so much. I think you'll also appreciate that the family is the basic unit in terms of socializing the girls and the boys. And let's further break down the family. There's a father, there's a mother, there are also siblings around the family. So when you talk about the socialization of children now, it's coming from this kind of a parent with a father or a mother who also is aware of gender issues, who is aware of the need to promote gender equality within the family, whether in terms of sharing the household chores, whether in terms of equal distribution of income, whatever level, that they also appreciate the need to promote the rights of the girl child, much as they also promote the rights of the boy child. So at that level now, we also have this kind of a model family that's grounded around gender equality issues. Should we then take this further to the institutions of learning, whether it's, these are secondary schools or even tertiary institutions, we then have the same conversations where we put the boys and the girls within the same platform, where they begin to engage, when they begin to interact, when they begin even to challenge the notions around what it means to be a boy, what it means to be a girl. It's also at that level that we then bring in our lessons from home, which lessons promote gender equality issues against this kind of a boy or girl who's coming from this other family, which is maybe grounded in patriarchy, which believes in the male domination or vice versa. So it's at this level where we also need to promote these gender equitable norms in terms of how we raise our daughters and how we can raise our sons. Let's raise sons who also respect not necessarily their own mothers, but also their own siblings who are sisters. Let's also have daughters who are not just like the recipients of the male power, but they also participate within the family as equal players. So it's this kind of a mentality and this kind of a process of socializing that also then promotes assertiveness within the girl child, which they also then take even with them to institutions of higher learning and even schools.
Okay, so we're talking about breaking the gender barriers there, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the Artist Radio in town. I'm going to take a quick break. And now the main topic, or rather the theme for the year, gender-based violence within the workplace. That's what we'll be discussing when we come back.
The platform. Step up and speak up.
Tune into ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. It is the final section of the platform coming up after at half past the hour of 8 o'clock is Chilla with our story. But we carry on with our discussion in as far as gender-based violence is concerned. Of course, we're just our second day into the 16 days of activism campaign against gender-based violence, which is a campaign to challenge violence against women and children. And the campaign for this year is End Gender-Based Violence in the Workplace, or in the world of work, to be specific, in as far as how it is worded. So I'm going to come back to you, Virginia, with the CEO of Zimbabwe Gender Commission. In as far as, violence in gender-based violence in the workplace, when someone's sitting at home, they're like, okay, is it necessarily people punching each other in the workplace? What is GBV in the workplace?
Okay, we did talk about the issue of gender-based violence, or at least the word gender not being synonymous with women only. But as long as we're talking about gender, we need to also be aware or alive to the fact that we do have an equal power in social relations, and those are tilted in favor of the men. So even the most marginalized men, the most depraved men, you see that the women in his circle are below him in terms of position. So we find that from that perspective, we need to be able to recognize that the issue of power, once that power is abused, it also gives, part of how it's also abused is that it either manifests itself as gender-based violence, physical, or in the world of work, it manifests in that you then find that there are some barriers where at a certain level, depending on whether you're holding a lot of power within an institution, you decide for yourself that you don't believe that women should be in leadership positions. That's some form of economic abuse, because whatever resources accruing in that organization are going to be accruing to those that are in leadership. And when you look at also even the issue of the world of work, one of the predominant forms of violence is the sexual harassment, where you find that depending, sexual harassment is a crime of opportunity. You are in a position to be able to ask for sexual favors or do whatever it is you want to do to colleagues. And while some people have started to say, it's consensual, somebody has the ability to say no. We don't believe that it is consensual as long as you hold power and the person that's actually being asked for that relationship is not confident that if they say no, they're going to still retain their positions. So we've got that issue. Although even the physical violence does happen, where you find that it may not always be reported, but you'll find that if somebody is violent at their own level, at their own family level, that violence does come into the workplace. Whether it's violence in terms of the psychological demeaning of people within a workplace, where you could have the kind of effect where workers are told that you're useless, you can't do anything, you shouldn't be here. And you find what that does is it kills somebody. It removes the assertiveness that my brother from Padare was talking about. So unfortunately, that kind of violence, the psychological one, may not be easy to measure. So it's then not seen. And the sexual harassment one also has another complication where if the person that's being harassed is attached in their life, reporting the sexual harassment means that they're also going to bring problems into their relationship. Let's say it's a married woman. How do I report that I've been harassed? And then still have to explain, because unfortunately our cultural context is such that even when you are harassed at work, you'll find that you'll be blamed. Is it about you? Are you the only woman in that place? So what that also does is it compounds the vulnerability of people, from women to be harassed. I'll also say that it is not just women that are harassed. There may be situations where men are harassed. But again, when we go back to our cultural context, when a man is sexually harassed, he may not recognize it as harassment. Because again, he's been brought up to believe that anything that is sexual is a conquest for him. So you then find that you don't recognize when you're being harassed. And you don't report it because you think you are a champion. But at the end of the day, we're saying that if anybody abuses a position of power in the wrong way with sexual connotations, and that leads to other people feeling like they're not worthy workers, it is sexual harassment.
Ben and Gage, the question I ask is, so what do you as a man do, being engaged in as far as this issue, to try to create a safer environment for women in the workplace? And sometimes even it might be even cases where I know some of the most vulnerable people are, say, interns who don't understand how the world works. They're just walking in and they can be taken advantage of. How do you help create that safe environment, not only by your own behavior but the behavior of those around you?
I think it's mostly awareness among men, but also awareness among young people.
No, but the question is, I think the awareness thing, a person who has been abusive normally knows they're being abusive. Mm. So it's not like they're not aware that they're being abusive or that they're creating undue influence in somebody who you can see is being uncomfortable. So beyond awareness, because everyone within the context of that discussion is aware of the fact that it's wrong.
You know, the issue is around power. Mm. Who has power and what do they do with the power that they have? The power that you have, do you have power over, power within, and power over, you have power with? Power is a big thing. We can even talk 3 days just talking about power. But what do you do with the power that you have? Do you use it constructively or you use it in an abusive way? For example, some of it are comments, Larry. For instance, a young girl comes or an intern comes and men start to make comments like, kasukurira pano wena, panishaka batira, you know, all that. It is harassment already. No, makura mainini, mbota sao kutoni, things like that.
Okay,
that's harassment.
So the question I want to ask is, we want to get everybody else in on the conversation.
Yes.
Specifically, say I'm seeing somebody else do it. That's the specific question I'm asking. Mm. What do I do as a fellow man seeing that there's that situation happening to someone?
You have to challenge it head on. Mm. If you don't believe it, unless you're also doing it. If you don't believe it, what you're doing, Timothy, is wrong. You're using your power to abuse this young person. Mm. It is wrong. I will report you. according, you know, most of the organizations have sexual harassment policies. Some do not have. But I will report it. I will not keep quiet. You need to stand up. Protect that person. Talk to the young person. What is happening here? You might enjoy it. You might not enjoy it. This is abuse. And I will make sure that this will not happen. You know, we need to be, even if people say you're controversial, or even if they say you are, you know, you're coming out of the norm, it's fine. But let's talk about the evil that is happening, and let's expose it. We can't keep hiding it in the name of brotherhood. That's not brotherhood if you're hiding something like that, because we can't hide a crime and say we are brothers, so I'll hide a crime. We have to expose it. We have to make everyone know that this is not good, and also to encourage institutions to come up with sexual harassment policies that are very clear. Let it be known the very day that someone works through the doors to know that if 1, 2, 3 happens, I report this way. Some of the policies are just there for audit's sake. Mm. That when the auditor said, "Do you have this policy?" people pick it, yeah. And they don't even know what it says. But the policy must be very clear about sexual harassment, very, very clear. And at workplace, we need to, it's a safe space. We spend more time there. We all need to be safe, both men and women. We all need to be safe. So it must be this environment where you go there, you do your work, you grow in your work, and you are happy, and you know that you are protected. So it's high time we need to have clear policies that are known. But also, let's challenge it. When it happens, let's challenge it. When I see the other brother hiding it, I will talk about it, that you are hiding it, and also expose what is happening.
0731-168-045. Chinsman in Mount Pleasant says, "I agree with Padare, although I think it was men engaged who said it. Although I wasn't meant to enrich oneself, but kusunga ukama." I'm going to come to you, Abeb. The question I want to ask is, how do you encourage inclusivity within the workplace? Because I think that's a key aspect. Often we talk about diversity, but not so much inclusivity.
Yeah, I think this is a very valid question. Inclusiveness is one of the, I think sometimes the missing elements, yeah. When you are talking about, you know, addressing, you know, violence at workplace, gender-based violence, you know, as it has been mentioned by Madam, violence, you know, including, you know, starting from, you know, might be verbal violence, you know, harassment, sexual, a lot of things. But sometimes some organizations, most of the organizations, they do have, you know, policies in place. But that policy is not in practice. Mm. But the most important thing is, if there is an inclusive in a sense, all of men, women, everybody, the management, you know, supervisory level, technical people, they have to be involved in the policy formulation process. That process will enable them to get the buy-in. Now, this is the policy. Sometimes we are prescribing policy. Okay, so now, as of today, we have, you know, a policy that addresses, you know, sexual harassment, you know, violence, you know, based on this violence, based on this, you know, policy. If something happened, then you will be penalized. Mm. Now, people are trying to hide. If someone is not doing some kind of violence, you know, their friends will hide. So it's unnoticeable. If someone is hiding, and no one is going to, you know, report it. But if that inclusiveness is included, now this is my policy, which I invested my time, which I believe on it. If you are violating, I am the one who is punishing you. Is not something, because the punishment in a sense is not, you know, physical fighting. Mm-hmm. As per that policy, that has to be, you know, addressed. Mm-hmm. So inclusiveness is not simply just, you know, bringing people and just to let them about what is the content and how. No, that is not the case. This is the most important thing, which is really not practicing in most of the organizations. Inclusiveness has to include each and everybody else, even to in the organization, even to the extent of, you know, stakeholders. So if we are doing that, that policy will be getting buy-in. People may, staff or employees may not feel this is in a prescription which is given from the top management. Mm. But this is a policy which I've involved in, which is I'm responsible for its implementation. If it's the case, then you are creating a safe environment where the sexual or violence is very, very, very minimal. Then the employee will enjoy their work. Most of the time, You know, there is some hierarchical issue in some organization. You know, just women may not, you know, the right person for this position, and men are, you know, this position. You know, sometimes you are wondering, you know, if the woman, men CEO is when you think, why? Sometimes people say, because of known men there. These are the people that feeling. That feeling, that kind of understanding has to be, you know, get right off through the inclusiveness process. Why we need, first of all, why we need that policy? We have to come to the consensus about the importance of the policy. And at the same time, if that policy exists, who is really the responsible person? Is that the top management? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people say that this is the top management, you know, role and regulations. We are, you know, just, you know, a recipient. But if this, if, you know, all those from the top, middle, and, you know, the frontline staff members, if they are, you know, involved in the policy formulation, definitely inclusiveness will be in practice. So if there's inclusiveness, the policy will be implemented, you know, accordingly. That's why earlier that we have discussing in this country or in most of the African countries, there are a lot of policies. I think Africa has no problem in terms of policies for each and everything. But the problem is, you know, how this policy is practicing. This is the most important thing.
I remember, a prominent lawyer who's also a member of parliament in Kenya said Kenya has got 3,000-page document, and as far as tackling corruption, they've got laws for everything, but in terms of corruption, they've still got high levels. So,
absolutely,
again,
yeah,
the top-down approach.
Yeah.
Final question, coming to Munya here from Padare. How do you then encourage a mindset in men? For example, some men think if they're working with a woman, automatically they must hit on them. You know, they just feel like automatically it's open season. So how do you encourage the mindset that you know, you can engage people on a professional for different sex on a professional level without it having to escalate into something else?
And that's an interesting one. Yes, I think the workplace is a very unique setup, in the sense that you read certain textbooks, they also tell you that a lot of relations will also start at the workplace. Bill Gates married at his workplace. Barack Obama married at his workplace. There are always quite a number of reasons that people also advance. But back to what my colleague has said from the Zimbabwe Gender Commission, is the abuse of power for us that's an issue. And the abuse of power, how do we also propagate the environment around abuse of power? I think that's what we need to tackle first. What we've been doing as an organization also is to bring the top management first. But what we've also seen is that should just bring a program that doesn't touch on the key decision makers within an institution, doesn't really subsist in terms of realize its intended goals. So we conscientize the top management around what it means to create an inclusive and a gender-sensitive environment within the workplace. Should also then do that, we encourage men to sit down to talk about issues. Many times people behave in a particular manner because of the information that they also have. They can't live beyond the kind of information that they've been exposed to. So what also they need to do, and that's what we're doing, is to inculcate these positive values in men. Bring this new narrative around what it means to be a man, even within the workplace. How can you also responsibly use power? In any case, we're at the workplace to advance about the bottom line of the organization, whether it's about social change, whether it's about important communities. That's what we're there at the workplace for. And each and every player is a key core within the relation of the bottom line. So that's what we basically target at, and that's what we advance when we engage at the workplace. But beyond just top management engagement, we're also bringing in the component of the board. They define the policies. They also set the tone around what needs to be done. It's at this level where we are also campaigning for the involvement of women in leadership and decision making, that they also define the kind of environment that has always been defined by men. Let's also have this this picture that's being shared by women around what it means to have a gender neutral and also a gender sensitive and an organization that also empowers everyone, whether men or women. So the gender lenses also then define the kind of environment that we also be seeking to do. So men sit down, men talk, men have discussions, men also then support each other. Because there's also a notion, men also they discuss, they share, they also encourage each other to do positive things in the workplace.
Okay, that's the voice of Munira Zinengu, who's a Padare Men's Forum. And also early on, we had also in the studio had Abby Shibra, who is the country director for Population Services. Nakai Ngomasha was the Men Engage. And also Virginia Mwanuga, the CEO of Zimbabwe Gender Commission. Remember that we are right smack at the beginning of the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. And this is a campaign to challenge the violence against women and children. And it's running until the 10th of December, which is Human Rights Day. And the theme for this year, for this year's campaign, is End Gender-Based Violence in the World of Work. Yeah, so that's it for today. Coming up right now is Chila with Our Story. I'm back with you tomorrow between 8:30 and 9 on Health Matters. Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo. And I want to thank all my guests for coming in. Thank you very much for coming in.
Good, thank you.
Stay tuned to ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, the hottest radio in town. And Chila's coming out with Our Story. And as I always say from where I come from, my name is Larry Quiridai. Asibi, Siasebenza. Take care of yourself.